You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, you can watch Cleveland Browns on demand in HD on your computer, tablet, or mobile device by subscribing to Game Rewind on ClevelandBrowns.com. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm back here with you in the Dog Bowl in Berea. How are we going to get this ground game going? We talked about some of the scheme standpoints. I still want to see Isaiah Crowell play, and I'll continue to say that until I guess the season is over. I want to see more of Isaiah Crowell. I think he's the most explosive back we've got. Our running game, the two games that he was not utilized much, were the two worst running games we've had this season. I want to see more of the Crow. I think that would help. I think he provides that element of danger. I think everybody kind of sees when he gets the ball, you have an opportunity to have a big play. He can go to the house. So hopefully we will get to see a little bit more of that. We'll see if that does come to be. But personnel-wise, that's the only change I'd make. But I do think you need to have some, as we talked about, schematic adjustments, some spreading out, but also some getting big, using a guy like Vincent Painter maybe or another lineman and kind of a little bit of a jumbo set to just take it to somebody physically.
You're
impose
right.
Your will.
Exactly. And the hard part about this is still, in my eyes, is I think you have three different personalities at running back. You know, so when you do innovate and when you do try to do your best to manufacture yards, you then have to make a judgment call on what player is suited for which play or which innovation or which type of runs do they succeed in? Because now after we've gotten a much larger sample size, I think Tate likes the cutback. West is a dancer. Crowell is a.
And I thought West played much better this week.
He did. You know, he ran with behind his pads, as they say, and he ran hard and he got some tough yards when there wasn't a lot out there on a couple of his runs. But I just think it's, again, Kyle Shanahan wants one of these. It's been very hard. He said he wants someone to step up, but as you said, also we had our two worst rushing performances in the last two football games, so he has nothing to base it off of.
That is, yes, I mean,
a quandary.
Yes, between a rock and a hard place. All right, we want to hear from you. 216-578-0850. Also, get on the board with us on the phone, and also let us know on Twitter or via your phone call. What's been the biggest key? Why are the Browns 3-1 the last four games? We'll talk about that after we talk to Stan in Brooklyn. Stan, welcome to CBD.
Really, thanks very much for taking my call.
You got it.
You know, you got two representatives there, one from Lake County, one from Lorain County. Lurie Catholic, Lake Catholic, great people.
Fine gentlemen.
Great personnel there.
Thank you.
But, I went to all the games except the last game, and I studied what's going on here. And, when you have two players that have played together for, I believe, 6 or 7 years now, Alex Mack and Joe Thomas, and I'm not taking anything away from the other members of the offensive line, but I think personally myself, what I saw when Alex Mack was healthy, I saw continuity, I saw synchronization, I saw poetry in motion.
Yes.
And after he got injured, Alex Mack, everything went south, okay? And I believe strongly in my heart that if he would have been in that game, Alex Mack, that we would have gained more yards on the ground. The Browns changed their total game plan somewhat. They went away from what they were doing well into some of the things that they don't do well. And one of the things was Ben Tate constantly running towards the edge, you know what I'm saying? Where his running ability is up the middle, okay? I pray for the Browns. Okay, I'm there. I'm for him. I'm 71. I pray for Jordan Cameron. You know, this is his third concussion. Where's he going to be at here?
Right.
He was just starting to come into his own. The last game he played great until he got hit.
Three catches for 40 yards. He was on his way to a very good game.
Fans got to quit complaining.
Enjoy the wins.
Amen.
All right, Stan, we appreciate your comments. I think, obviously, Alex Mack is a guy that we're going to find out is irreplaceable. That's why he's probably the most sought-after center in the NFL. He's an absolute perfect fit for the zone scheme that the Browns were running. But a lot of teams have a lot of critical injuries, and you just need to find a way to keep on and keep on keeping on, which is what we're trying to do here on CBD. And that's kind of what we outlined for this team and their ability to kind of get back to running the football. You've got to make adjustments. And you, Alex Mack, just he's not here. He's not coming back, unfortunately. So you got to make do with what you have. And I think the Browns will find a way to do that. It's an interesting point, though. It does seem to me at times Tate likes to run. Now, plays are called that way, but he either likes to get out to the edge or he likes to really cut back to the backside. It seems that there's a lower percentage of his runs where he kind of just follows the natural front side flow of the play.
Sure. I mean, you look at a guy like DeMarco Murray last night. You want to talk about patience? I mean, not only is he having an amazing season, but he's got a great offensive line, probably an offensive line early in the season that rivaled the way in which our offensive line was playing. But when you watch a guy like DeMarco Murray, he's patient. You know, he waits for those blocks to set up. And that's been very tough. You know, it's even very hard for me to analyze the way Ben Tate has been running as of late.
A lot of chance,
because,
to be fair.
Yeah, not a lot of chance. But also, too, is, I mean, there's guys, you know, when we were talking prior to the Jacksonville game, it was 3 yards before he got first contact. Okay, and now I would say that has to be at least cut in half or be less than a yard.
I will tell you where that is momentarily.
You got it, man. I'll fill some airtime. But Ben Tate, he's getting penetration. He's getting his own players' offensive linemen's feet at his feet when he's receiving the ball. So he's basically making a two-way go. It's, okay, nothing inside. I'm going to take it right to the edge, you know, or edge, you know, and we saw that against the Oakland Raiders, Barnage or Dre or Cameron getting thrown to the ground. Again, guys at his feet, and he immediately has to take it back towards, you know, behind the center or that front side A-gap, and by then the defense was reacting. So it's a very tough go because he's not able to read his blocks because there's so much penetration defensively.
Yeah, and it has been tough. And here are the numbers for you now. Ben Tate is now taking contact 1.8 yards after he gets the ball. Terrence West has been taking contact 1.4 yards after he gets the ball on average. I think a lot of that has to do with the dancing. And the interesting thing is that Isaiah Crowell is still only taking contact 3 yards down the field because I think he presses that hole. And he's had plenty of negative runs as well, but I think he just presses the hole a little faster and gets north-south a little quicker than the other backs right now in the stable, which is why I'd like to see him get a little bit more of an opportunity. Let's go to Chuck in Bellevue now. Chuck, welcome to CBD.
Hey, how you gentlemen doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I think we should let Johnny go and pick up Nick Mangold and be our problem solver. You don't realize how important alignment to be. And not to change the subject too much, but I saw that game last night with Colt and
Whedon.
Colt and Whedon, but it sure kind of blows Mr. Goldhammer's theory. You have to have a quarterback. I think it's the people around him that made the difference.
Well, I think if you were to listen to Ray Farmer, the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, you know, it's not all about one guy, and you need to surround the team with a lot of talent, and I think that's kind of the model that obviously was used there in Seattle, San Francisco. Yes, it's important to have your franchise quarterback, the guy that is the face of the franchise, but you don't want – it can be tough unless you have that special, special guy to have someone that you're putting basically everything on the shoulders of at the quarterback position.
You're right. And I mean, the one other point just about positions in general is we make a – even if we put that into motion and had that conversation with the New York Jets about Mangold for Manziel, that leaves us with Connor Shaw as the backup quarterback – barring injury of Brian Hoyer. So that means we'd actually have to make some type of additional move. And if a lot of you Hoyer fans out there are not even an advocate of the number 22 draft pick, essentially the future quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, taking snaps this season, and if Brian Hoyer gets hurt, you're putting the season, the Cleveland Browns season on the shoulders of Connor Shaw or someone who's not even on the roster right now. So
Alex Mack's under contract and he's going to be back next year. So you're not trading for a center.
No,
you're
not another Pro Bowl center. Yeah, it's not a quick fix.
No, it's not a quick fix. The trade deadline for the NFL approaching rapidly, though. Something to keep an eye on there. Trades are very tough to come by in the NFL, so don't expect too much to happen because that just kind of seems to be the way that it is. Not a lot of trades there. Now this team 3-1 in the month of October, and one of the things we've asked you to share with us today, either via Liberty on Twitter, at Browns underscore daily, at Nathan Zagura, at Matt Wilhelm 57, or with us on the phone lines, 216-578-0850. What's the biggest reason why you think the Browns have turned it around and they are 3-1 here over their last four? And I'll tell you what, I think it starts with the letter D, and it is defense, 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 specifically the linebackers and the back end of this defense starting at halftime of that Tennessee Titans game. I think that's when things really turned around for the Browns, because think about it. They didn't give up a point in the second half of that game. They gave up 10 points to the Pittsburgh Steelers on defense, including one touchdown in garbage time. That touchdown came when that game was 31-3 at that point, out of reach completely. Then you go to Jacksonville, you give up one legitimate touchdown drive. The other two were all inside of basically 10 yards after turnovers. So they were, the defense did play well enough in that game to win. The offense did not. And then Oakland, 23-13, really 23-6 for the whole game until they scored a meaningless touchdown at the end of the game. So you've had a defense that has shut teams down, shut offenses down completely basically 4 weeks in a row. And when you think about what that Pittsburgh Steelers offense just did to Indianapolis, I think that becomes more impressive. To me, it's the emergence of Kaywan Williams. It's the emergence of Justin Gilbert. On the back end of that defense, Joe Hayden rounding into four, and Tashaun Gibson playing at such a high level. Buster playing well. Dante Whitner playing well. You've got your linebackers of Dansby and Kirksey playing at high levels. Paul Kruger back to 100%, three sacks last week. So I think it's the defense that has really kind of taken over following the bye week. Basically, from the second half of the Tennessee game on, it's been that defense that has been spectacular.
Yeah, what's so great about this is we still talk about holes, or you know, a position group not playing their best football, even on defense. So all those statistics you just laid out for us and the dominance that we've seen in the last, 12 quarters of football is, but we always poke and prod at one group could step up and do this, like the defensive line allowing Denard and the linebackers allowing Denard Robinson to go for 127. And I know he didn't have a direct impact on that football game point wise or setting up a scoring drive, but the one maybe it's, but there's always one group that we talk about. And what's encouraging about that is the fact that as they continue to grow, and I think Jim O'Neill and Coach Mike Pettine have said all along, it's, we're growing, we've simplified, and we heard him talk about in the presser this week, you know, answering those types of questions, is they're adding to as we go, you know, because they probably came out with a little too much content for these guys. They then tapered it back. They found what their wheelhouse is. And now, and this was my favorite part about game planning once the season started, because learning the entire playbook is very difficult, you know, regardless of where you're at, especially when you have a new defensive coordinator, new defensive scheme. But when it gets really fun is when you get good and then you start to attack that individual team you're playing and you add a blitz. It's, again, it really is. So when I talk about Kyle Shanahan with innovation, and in this case it's Pettine and Jim O'Neill, when they watch film all Monday night and all Tuesday and you come in Wednesday and they give you that pamphlet with some like new exotic blitzes or a coverage that you're going to play to stop a guy like Vincent Jackson or Mike Evans, you're like, it's like it gives you goosebumps as a defender, like, yeah, this is going to be fun this week, you know. And we're getting to that point where it's getting fun for these guys, and that's why we're seeing sacks, forced fumbles, INTs with returns as well. And that's when the game gets really fun.
Tashaun Gibson not only leading the league with 5 interceptions, also leading the league with interception returns as well. And, you know, you talk about those blitzes. That's why you see a free runner like a Paul Kruger. And it's why you also see at times, last night, for example, Dallas Washington. I don't know how much of that game you got to watch, but
all of it.
The Redskins, White 5 sacks. They had unbelievable. 5 sacks. They had free runners constantly. So that was a game where they threw in wrinkles that they knew specifically for their opponents would be successful, and they had unbelievable results.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that was because when you look at the Dallas Cowboys and the way that offense has been playing, you know, Jim Haslett, defensive coordinator, looks at his personnel and goes, we got a rookie corner. You know, we got a bunch of guys who can't cover Dez Bryant and Williams and Witten and Murray and all these guys, you know, that Dallas has. Well, how do you do your best to stop that, bring pressure, and force Tony Romo, you know, under duress to find that matchup that he likes and that one-on-one situation that's winning on a given route? And we saw time and time again, Tony Romo cringed with pressure in his face. Tony Romo was inaccurate, just like our own Brian Hoyer, when someone's running at your face free. So pressure, that's why you want to play as a defender for a coach that loves to pressure the quarterback.
Absolutely. Tony Romo does make some unbelievable kind of Houdini escapes and little throws
does.
But they got to him five times, knocked him out of the game in that one. That was a big reason why the Washington Redskins won. I thought they're going to win in regulation when they got that unbelievable blitz strip, and somehow they didn't come up with the ball. Ryan Kerrigan looked like he had it right at the end of regulation, but somehow did not. And then those Skins went on to win 20-17. In overtime. When we come back, we're going to continue to hit the phones, 216-578-0850. We'll also start to get into our grades as we take our final look back at the victory over the Oakland Raiders, 23-13, here on CBD's Agur and Wilhelm, ESPN 850 WKNR.